style. She was loved by men, especially men. In fact, her dentist wrote a song for her and recorded it at a professional studio and played it for her, closed down the dental office on the day of her appointment. I happened to be with her. She was in her 80s at that time. And he played this song for her. Her name was Delilah, and he had recorded a song to her. And it was in her 80s when she began experiencing tremors in her hands and weakness that was the onset of Parkinson's disease. We never spoke of it, as women of her generation did not use words associated with the body. She could talk about my hair, though. Women, you may remember this, some of you, were not pregnant, they were expecting. She was becoming a little unstable. I can't remember the exact wording, but we never used the P word, Parkinson's. And still she could laugh at her instability. My brother sat next to her on an airplane, and she had one of those juices that you have to stick the straw into, and she was doing this, abracadabra. And when I traveled to see her from Japan, she told me this joke. She said, "You know, there was a preacher who came over to a parishioner's house and said, 'Let's talk about the hereafter.' And the parishioner said, 'I know a lot about the hereafter. Every time I go into a different room, I say to myself, what am I hereafter?'" And then my grandmother laughed and laughed. And during our conversation, we had to stop often so that she could remember. And I have an incredible memory for almost every story I've ever been told, so I was able to fill in the parts that she couldn't remember. What was I there after? Well, I wanted to spend time with her because I knew that there would be a day when I couldn't. So today, here together, what are we here after? We are engaging in the last part of a process that began a year ago. And as Reverend Carla and you were preparing to part, as you were saying goodbye, the quality of that goodbye and your year welcoming Reverend Terry have been creating a foundation for the next step that might become a new chapter with me as your minister. And as Unitarian Universalists, we have this beautiful, well thought out group of principles. I go to the 1 and 7th a lot, not the ones in between so much. But now we need number 5. This is our 5th principle. We affirm the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. We affirm the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process. And now we are in the middle of the democratic process of this congregation. The results will play out in a week after the service. You will be voting. And this week we have that delicious in-between time where you have more of a chance to get to know me. And I invite you to email me if you have a question. I will only answer 2 per person. Not really. If you send a third, but 4, And during this important time, I wonder how we could take Rainer Maria Rilke's advice to this young poet at a crossroads, wondering which way to go. How do we take what is unsolved in our hearts and try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms, like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. How do we live into this time? Rilke knew from experience that forcing creativity did not work. If any of you are painters and you don't have an idea of what to do, launching into a canvas doesn't usually work, nor does trying to launch into a poem. Poems, it's been my experience, come from deep within. They want to come out. They're not usually pulled out. And Rilke knew that you have to live into this time in between. And he also knew the brilliant work that would emerge. I love his poetry. And it is hard to be an artist. It is hard to be a human and wonder, is this my last poem, my last painting, my last dance, my last work of whatever it is that you do? And now I have a confession. The friend, the niece, in my story for all ages was me. At 19 years old, I had a brief period where I wanted to be a doctor, and I loved biology, especially biochemistry, and my university didn't like women to become doctors because they took the place of men. But beyond that, I came to realize that more than anything else, I wanted that coat, because doctors did wear coats then. Because I had grown up in an extremely patriarchal culture, and thinking of having people respect me simply when they saw my coat filled me with yearning. I also happened to be very afraid of blood. I had had bad experiences as a child with injections, and I still tell the person who takes my blood I need to lie down because I might faint. My call to ministry was very different than that. Although sometimes I wear a clergy collar and I feel proud to do that, and represent the congregation I am serving at state capitals and at the national capital. But that was not why I became a minister. In 1963, when Martin Luther King Jr. was sitting in a cell in the Birmingham jail, it was late April. Flowers blooming all around the city, adorning the churches. He knew that at any moment, mobs could pull him out of jail. Guards would probably stand by and do nothing. And he was wondering about the purpose of his life. What was he here after? He was disappointed, deeply disappointed. He had hoped that the clergy of Birmingham would support the nonviolent movement, and indeed they had promised him that they would support the movement. But after that messy process began, now those same clergy were telling him what we so often tell others, which I have thought and said, this is not the right time. This is too soon. And he was disappointed in them. And I think he was asking himself if it was worth it. He had worked so hard. He had had great success. Yet he knew that he could not change the status quo that was at the root of the suffering in his people without the help of others. And into that question, that time of disappointment, he wrote a letter that is one of the most brilliant pieces of writing that I have read. And in the middle of that, I see this part as a vision. He wrote, "We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. We are tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly." He was saying to the clergy, "We are tied together. Your liberation, your salvation depends upon ours. Your destiny depends upon ours." I wonder, have you ever felt yourself caught in an inescapable network of mutuality? I'm going to ask that again because I really want you to think about that. And the word inescapable is what is jumping out to me of this sentence that is, I believe, one of the most important sentences written in the last 100 years. Have you ever felt yourself caught in an inescapable, you can't get out of it, network of mutuality? I have. It was my feeling of being inescapably connected with the migrants who were crossing around us that propelled me into Unitarian Universalist ministry. But you can read about that in my bio, because recently this vision has come to me again, and it will not let me go. And it is this vision that brought me to this place. During the past few months, I have been enjoying a sabbatical. At first, and my wife, who is always encouraging me to have fun, I was going to read all of those novels that I didn't have time for. And then I went to preach at a church on the eastern shore of Maryland. And when I preached at that church, they said, "Do you know that the courthouse of this town was a place of lynching?" And so I read that book. But something was different this time. I have read so many books to try to understand the history of this country. But there was something different because I had been to that place. I had stood on that lawn. And something shifted for me. And it was, I must say, inescapable. So instead of reading those books, I began to read the history of the place where we lived. I dove into the history of Maryland and Virginia, discovering that this year marks 400 years since that first boat, the San Juan Bautista, brought human beings from Africa to Jamestown. And studying that history was hard, but I could not escape from it. And it was the best thing I could have done with the last months. This inescapable network caught me in quite a grip. For living on that land, I was shaken open to the history of enslavement, and I began to see connections that I had only seen from the surface. I began to see the roots of what had happened that brought to us the banner that is outside this church, and also the reasons why that banner kept being defaced. A vision of that network of mutuality opened my eyes to the limitations of my individual journey, and those realizations made me want to return to ministry. And so I made my ministerial website, which I think many of you have seen. Have you? You must. It took me a long time. RevPattyWillis.com. And then I had the evening of speaking with your marvelous search committee, and now I am here today. And I come to you with bone-deep knowledge that to really make a difference in this world, we need each other. We need community. We are inescapably tied to that network of mutuality. Last night, Gary Beverly, the environmental activist who received the Lovejoy Award, made this clear in his presentation. This is our work, he told us. And he even wanted to share the prize with Granite Peak congregation. Isn't that wonderful? He wanted to share the prize with you because of the light that this congregation has been in this community. The endangered fish and bird species, the future depends on saving them. Do you remember when President George Bush laughed about the possible demise of the spotted owl?
That spotted owl.
How different our world would be if he had felt empathy for that owl and started thinking, my life is inescapably tied to that spotted owl. This is the shift that we need to make. The shift from seeing ourselves as benevolent helpers to doing the work from we helping others, shifting that, and knowing that the work of healing, protecting, lifting up the most vulnerable parts of our living world is our chance for a future. They are helping us. If you have had a hard time, if you're sitting there thinking I am a nut, you may be, it's okay. I've heard worse. But if you have a hard time thinking of that shift as Martin Luther King Jr. was trying to make the clergy of Birmingham shift their perspective, I invite you to ask young people, ask Noah, ask Muriel, ask the students at Prescott College, those young people we would love to see all over this congregation. Ask them, because I believe they would have a lot to teach us, because the future is real to them, because they will be here in 50 or 60 years when most of the rest of us are gone. And do not be surprised if they are angry with how we have been stewards of this world. Gary Beverly also spoke of the importance of hope and of having a long view. And this is my hope for our ministry together. It is much like the hope that Mary Lou and I had for our relationship many years ago when we were embarking on our new life together. After leaving our religious community and most of our family, we did not want an ordinary life. At the end of our lives, we wanted to be able to say to each other that our life had been more interesting, had been more joyful because we had chosen to be together. We promised each other to encourage and support each other in what our hearts desired and never hold each other back. And our lives have been full of brave leaps and turns and joy because of our commitment to approach our shared life creatively. And part of that has been we bought a house in Virginia 6 months ago. And here I am. This is a brave and nutty leap. But I think that if you choose to have our ministry be a shared ministry together, it is my hope that it will be filled with such brave and nutty leaps. And these next few days, may we learn to love the questions and live into this time. You know, I think that I admire my grandmother more because of how she was able to live into Parkinson's than all of her accomplishments, all of those accomplishments she was so proud of. It was her grace in the last years of her life that I most admire. And when we forget, as we are bound to do, when we forget what we are here after, may we remind each other, may we laugh together, may we be creative, or may we simply wait together until one of us remembers. Amen, and may it be so. I now invite you to rise in body or spirit. Song that comes from my feeling at this time, number 1020, Wo Ya Ya. And if nobody knows it, should we change it now? Does everybody know this song? Do you know this song? You can sing it. Okay, good.